Hello and welcome to Speaking Spirit, where we talk about all things spiritual. Your host, John Moore, is a shamanic practitioner and spiritual teacher. And now, here's John.
Hello, 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 everybody. So nice to talk to you. I realize I'm doing two of these in just a few days apart after taking a hiatus of nearly a year. I realize it was May of these, and now we're in March of 2024. A lot of things happened in that period of time, life-wise and teaching-wise and all kinds of stuff. Today we're going to talk about aliens and UFOs and UAPs and fairies and the occult and gods and goddesses and beings, entities, all kinds of names. And I want to start by saying that I was inspired to do this podcast by another podcast, so I want to give them credit where credit is due. I'm not going to steal what they were talking about or whatever, but the topic was an interview on a podcast that I've been listening to called Lux Occult, L-U-X-O-C-C-U-L-T. I highly recommend it. The host Lexi's really good. I have no affiliation with them. I've never met them. I will probably reach out to them and see if I can guest on their podcast sometime and maybe bring Lexi on as a guest here. Something along those lines. But their next to last episode, I think it was episode 75 or something, and I can't remember the name of the guest at this point, terrible of me, but as an occultist, and they were talking about sort of the UFO phenomenon, which some people call UAP phenomenon, and they were talking about it in a way that made a lot of sense to me, in a way that I've come to understand this phenomena. And I'm going to say up front, if you ask me the question, is this UFO phenomena aliens from out of space that have been visiting Earth for a long time, and there are conspiracies where the government has captured UFOs and yada, 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 my answer is going to be, I don't know. I don't know. I don't have definitive answers about that. I have things I believe, and I'll talk about those and why I believe those. But also my beliefs may be way off. And I want to talk about that as well, because it is important to understand that everything we experience, everything we understand in this world, we understand through our various lenses of belief. So, and that's going to be really important to today's conversation, or, you know, one-way conversation. I don't have any guests today. It's just me, but I'm going to talk about my understanding of this phenomenon and why is this, why, you know, when we're talking about the realm of spirit, why would we bring UFOs into this? Yeah, they're sometimes considered paranormal phenomena, and I'll probably use the word UFO a lot. I realize, like, the government, the U.S. government has started using UAP, which is unidentified aerial phenomena, which is probably a more accurate term. Because these things might not be objects in the, you know, some of them might not be objects in the sense of what we think of them as objects, you know, as physical things. Some of them clearly are physical things. They have beyond being sighted and being able to be recorded. We have radar recordings, so radar bouncing off something and returning, and physical effects from these things. And I'm not going to dive deep into all of the conspiracies from cattle mutilation to all of that, only as it reflects on our cultural mythology. And I think it is really, really important to look at these things through the lens of our mythology, the paradigm that we live through, right? How we view the paradigm, our paradigm is our model of how the world works, right? And so we are living in a technological age. We're living, you know, a couple hundred years ago, there weren't flying machines, right? There were no airplanes, there were no spacecraft, there's no internet, there was no wireless communication. All of that stuff has sprung up, and now we went through the Industrial Revolution. We're now deep into the technological revolution where we have AI. Everybody's using AI. Even if you don't think you're using it, you know, AI is being used by products that you use these days. If you're online, if you're, you know, writing letters to people or emails or, you know, that sort of thing, or using virus protection or any of these things, excuse me. So this phenomena of flying things, things appearing in the sky that sometimes have, you know, unusual beings, entities associated with them is not new. This hasn't been, you know, the UFO phenomenon. The word UFO was coined, I think, in the 1940s. But we have records of these craft going back as far as we have records of anything. We have, you know, in the Vedas, we have the Vrimanas, which are these flying castles that the gods came out of. And my view on this phenomena is that it is always viewed through the lens of current cultural understanding, as is everything, by the way. This is everything. So when, you know, these things have been going on since, you know, maybe before humans walked on Earth, and originally there would be, you know, the flying machines of the gods or angels. If you read about actual biblical descriptions of angels, not talking about the Renaissance paintings of fat babies or beautiful women in dresses with wings, there were angels in the Bible who were able to walk amongst man and not be confused for man. But some of these angels, particularly in the Old Testament, were like interlocking spinning rings with hundreds of eyes on them and spouting fire and so bright that it hurt the eyes to look on. Hey, that sounds like a spaceship. It sounds like an alien spaceship. And honestly, you know, people being pulled up into heaven. And so in the old times, I think there's a lot of overlap. And a lot of what I do in my shamanic work and my spiritual work in my understanding of things is look at how these things were understood or talked about or described over time by many different cultures that didn't necessarily contact one another or have, you know, inherit anything from one another. So an example of in modern parlance, you have little green people, right? You have, or the grays, or all of these races of alien beings, some tall, some small, you know, some look like humans, some look different than humans. Well, in how many different cultures? I have a list somewhere of something like 200 different terms from different cultures for little spiritual beings, from fairies, elves, gnomes, brownies, green coats. Those are just some of the English terms. You have Menahune in Hawaii and Kontomble in West Africa and different terminologies throughout Asia and different terminologies throughout South America. They're talking about extremely similar phenomena. Human-like, but non-human beings who have magical powers, who sometimes help people and sometimes harm people, who, you know, can phase in and out of physical reality. This is so unbelievably common. It's in just about every culture I can think of. If not every culture, I just haven't heard about their, you know, their description for these beings. So, you know, we have the fairy faith in the sort of the British Isles and surrounding areas. And there are people who still follow that faith today. And I, as a shamanic practitioner, have worked with the Fae quite a bit. I can tell you that there are many, many different species. Some of them enjoy interacting with humans. Some of them do not. Some of my earliest paranormal experiences, and I have had more paranormal experiences in my life. Once you start entering this life, the paranormal world just seems to say, hey, how you doing? Let's be a part of each other's lives. Something happens, your perception opens up, or you glow in a way that they're, paranormal beings are attracted to you. I don't even really love the word paranormal. To me, it's just normal. It's just, most people going around in 3D reality don't have the same experiences. But I've had a lot of shared paranormal experiences where the people, in a fairly large group, several times have experienced many of the same things I have or have very overlapping descriptions. That's really hard. You ask two people who witness a car accident and you'll get two different descriptions from, ask them 5 minutes, different perspectives, different. We have this sort of belief that memory is like a video recorder, and it is not. Memory is constructed and it is influenced by our past experiences, our education, our upbringing, our culture, and our particular viewpoint. And it is not just a tape recorder, to use now an old-fashioned term, but something that, that if you recorded video on your phone wouldn't change from time to time, but your memories will change over time based on experiences, and your ability to recall things is not, there's a lot of research on eyewitness testimony being particularly unreliable. So let's talk about, just to go through it before I jump into the next sort of section of what I'm going to talk about. Over time, the paradigms have changed. Before we became a technological species, and we're always a technological species from like a tool-making perspective, but before modern industrial technology and digital technology and understanding of quantum physics and things like that, early on, these would have been gods, goddesses, the dead. It would have been fairies, menahune, contemple. And then as we get into the era where people start driving cars and there are flying machines and all of these things, now all of a sudden these are craft piloted by beings from outer space as we start to understand space. So as we start to understand things, we place our new understanding on this phenomena and that becomes the explanation for it. Some current people would explain the UFO, UAP, alien phenomena as interdimensional beings. Now that we're understanding things like parallel universes and, M-brains or M-theory, right? These membranes of reality that can sort of touch each other, and we understand gravity waves, and we understand, and who knows what comes after this, right? So it is our explanation of, I believe, very similar or same phenomena over the ages of human existence has changed based on our paradigm. Paradigm is, this model of how the universe works, right? We've gone through big paradigm shifts. It's really funny. My kids were born in 2006. They have never grown up in an age without cell phones or the internet or anything like that. And when I try to talk to them about like what pay phones were and how you couldn't just reach out and talk to anybody you wanted to anytime you wanted to, and how if you wanted to take a picture of somebody, you used a film camera and took that film in, and you might have to wait a week before it came back to see if your pictures even came out. It blows their minds. They're like, you were living in the Stone Age. Were you also hunting mastodons with flint-napped spears? So we've been through some big paradigm shifts, and it doesn't go, Yeah, I'm sure we've all noticed some changes even in the past few years. We're now in this AI era where AI is taking over. And with every technology, there's a bunch of fear that happens, right? You know, there's fear of AI, there's fear of robots. There was fear of the internet, you know, back in the day. I remember it well. There was fear of people having video cameras. There was fear of, radio and all kinds of stuff going back. So we see this crop up and, you know, part of this phenomena is dealing with some, I'm not saying this phenomena is caused completely by our fear, but the way that we interpret it often is caused by our fear. And in the podcast I was talking about, the guest was talking about how this is all associated with us trying to deal with death, what happens when we die. And that, again, you can trace that through history, right? Or, you know, even prehistory when we could do some research there. You know, we would go with the gods and goddesses, or we would go into the fairy realm. If people went missing or people died or, you know, whatever, it would be fairies, could have been vampires, werewolves, all kinds of things, right? Nowadays, there have been UFO cults where, you know, the notorious one I'm thinking of is the Heaven's Gate cult. They, you know, that all took their lives, when was that, back in the late 90s? And all thought they were going on a UFO that was following the Hale-Bopp comet. You know, a whole group of people took their lives to go to this UFO. So again, it's, you know, it comes out in a way that is associated with our way of making sense of death, what happens to us when we die. So that it seems very wrapped up in there. So I want to move on just a little bit, and I want to talk about UFO disclosure and sort of what's going on with the government, particularly in the U.S., having, you know, in the past couple of years, released a bunch of footage. There's been some testimony in front of Congress. I want to say this. I want to say that we cannot trust, this isn't just paranoia speaking, we cannot trust anything coming out of our military intelligence industrial complex. You can't trust anything they say because secrecy is their number one rule. Second of all, like any of this footage that came out, I mean, we don't know what it is. You know, we've heard people say, you know, we there seems to be the same strange technological craft. We have it on video, you know, taken by fighter pilots doing maneuvers that they, you know, laws of physics currently don't. I don't like the phrase violates the laws of physics or breaks the laws of physics. Nothing is breaking the laws of physics. They're just utilizing laws either that we don't understand yet or in ways that we don't understand. But nothing breaks the laws of physics. Everything follows natural law. There's nothing outside of natural law. Now, that being said, you know, our ideas about what those natural laws are sometimes proven wrong or incomplete, or they're different models. You know, so one of the laws of physics is that faster than time travel, or, you know, faster than light travel is not possible. And while that is technically true, there are actual mathematical models showing that we could move a vehicle by moving space-time past that vehicle faster than light speed. It wouldn't actually, the vehicle wouldn't actually be traveling. We would move space and time past it. Now, I'm not smart enough to understand how that works, but we already have a model of how that would work. We just can't make it work yet because it, in the current model, it requires too much energy. We can't produce enough energy to get that to work. But imagine a culture that lives in space. what we think of as space, we're the aliens to them. Imagine a culture on a planet, on a distant star that life developed a billion years. You know, think about what, you know, somebody 200 years ago looking at our technology today would think. They would think we are either gods and goddesses or witches or what have you, able to do magic. Even like a lighter, a Bic lighter, would be amazing technology to these people. You know, incandescent light bulbs, electricity, even though electricity was known for a long time, you know, Ben Franklin figured out that lightning and electricity were the same thing. And there were batteries in ancient Mesopotamia. Look up the Baghdad battery. We've lost a lot of tech. We've lost our ideas of what tech existed prior, you know, to current technology. But the Greeks, look up the Antikytherum device, which was a complex mechanical computer that very accurately calculated things like astronomical positions and eclipses and stuff like that. Incredibly complex piece of technology that was found at the bottom of the ocean in a shipwreck. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that defies what we think. Like, and every other day I'm reading an archaeological article that says, oh, we need to push the dates back for the discovery of this, or we need to push the dates back for the discovery of this. At this point, we are learning stuff so quickly about human origins, and there's still so much, you know, there's a lot of stuff, archaeologically speaking, that's underwater now because of sea levels rising and continental shift and things like that. So there's a lot of things about humanity that we just don't know. Not to mention, you know, the asteroid impact that happened, 11,000 years ago. Graham Hancock has been talking about this forever, and people are like, oh no, that's unscientific hogwash. Well, now they're starting to accept it. And so imagine living in the United States now, today, with the technology we have, with the infrastructure we have, with the homes we live in, all of this stuff, and an asteroid hits the Pacific Ocean and causes a 1,000-foot wall of water to cross the United States, sets the forests everywhere on fire and chokes the air with smoke, followed by, you know, 100 years of winter. What technology would be left? What buildings would be left? What vehicles would be left? And the answer is nothing. You know, it's funny. There are a lot of places where I live here in Maine where there are abandoned vehicles in the woods. For whatever reason, there's like a 1946 Packard on this hiking trail, like out in the middle of nowhere. And this thing, you know, has been there for under 100 years and is just rotting and falling apart. It is not going to last 1,000 years or even a couple hundred years. It'll be gone. The only thing left will be things that were made out of stone or earth. And some of those things, if you have a 1,000-foot wall of water crossing the continent at 150 miles an hour or however quickly, are going to be buried in silt and may never be found. You know, maybe hundreds of feet of silt that covers it. Cities would be gone in a blink of an eye. You know, there'd be a few survivors who are people who are living on the top of mountains or something. But their technology would be gone. And so unless they were, you know, survivalists with primitive skills, they're not going to, you know, pass on their knowledge and bloodline. And so anyway, imagine that. and that's where we are, right? So, again, I don't think we can trust anything, you know, coming out of, you know, Sun Tzu that wrote The Art of War? In The Art of War, it says deception is the basis of all combat. And, you know, our military industrial intelligence complex knows that and has been deceiving us and doing all kinds of crazy things over the years. So let's talk specifically about the UFO/UAP phenomena out there. Stuff stuff in the sky that people are seeing. And what is the explanation for that? And I want to say, first of all, that UFO does not equal alien spacecraft automatically. UFO means unidentified flying object, meaning I see something in the sky, I don't know what it is. Period. So when people say, I don't believe in UFOs, and I'm like, well, that's dumb. You should believe in UFOs. Have you ever seen something in the sky and then later found out it was a bird or some sort of drone or some weird thing? At one time, that was a UFO. You explained it later, but it was a UFO. It was an unidentified flying object. So people see a lot of stuff in the sky. Where I live, I live in Maine, and there's a Facebook group dedicated to unknown things. So people will post video and pictures and whatever. And there are like 1,000 photos of the Skylink satellites that travel in a straight line. You can see them in different areas. You can see them at night when the sky is clear. And they're fairly low Earth. So they look like these little white dots that are traveling in a line very quickly across the sky. It's Elon Musk's satellites. But for many people, those are UFOs until somebody explains them. So UFO just means unidentified flying object. Most people know this, but most people use that term to mean flying saucers with little aliens scooting around in the sky with them. And that might be an explanation for some of them, or it might not. I don't know for sure. So there are, you know, most of the things that people see that are in the beginning are unexplained can later be explained. So, you know, a lot of UFOs are seen near military bases. The military experiments with aircraft, different types of aircraft, including drones, all the time. And these projects are secret. And the technology that you and I know about, and this was confirmed by somebody that I knew who used to work for NASA, the technology we know about, we're at least 12 years behind what the military has and is capable of. For some tech, that may be 20 to 25 years. So the military has been able to do things for 12 to 25 years that we are maybe just able to find out about now. You remember the stealth bomber when that first came out? And everyone's like, ooh, they've been testing that for, who knows, a decade, whatever, out in Area 51. And a tremendous amount of UFO sightings around Area 51 were this stealth bomber. This isn't to say that there, you know, maybe there's some alien spacecraft at Area 51, but that is an area where they test experimental aircraft, spy planes, stealth bombers, all of that stuff. There is a huge military black budget, meaning we can't know what it is. We don't know what it is. And that's been a big thing in Congress as well, where Congress is, you know, some members of Congress are like, listen, you got to start telling us what you're doing. Like, we can just give you money to do whatever with. Some of the recent testimony about UFOs has been in that area, has been specific to budgetary type stuff. So does the U.S. government have alien spacecraft that they've recovered, some of which being ancient? You know, I believe it's a strong possibility, you know, whether that is alien from outer space, whether these are, you know, there are different potential explanations for what these craft are, right? Aliens from outer space is the one that we go to the most. It's been in our media. And I got to tell you that a lot of our media is shaped by the narrative that has been put out there by the powers that be. So it's very possible that there are active disinformation programs that come out by governments all over the world, right? Again, deceit, the art of war, deceit is the basis of all warfare. So there's a lot of misleading stuff out there. You know, and there's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of very, very secret stuff. But check out a story by something I found really compelling was this guy, Bob Lazar, who came out and said, you know, I worked at Area 51, And, you know, people would either believe him or didn't believe him. And they're like, yeah, there was the spacecraft and I was working on the power supply. And they had 7 of these spacecraft that they dug up from all over the world, some of which were ancient. And they were powered by element 115. Now, element 115 is not on the periodic table. And, but ages before, we have recently said, yeah, there is a stable isotope of element 115. Bob Lazar was talking about this a decade or two before that scientific information came out. And then he said, you know, I got my, you know, doctorate or whatever. I studied at Berkeley. I think it was Berkeley or whatever. And people, and I worked for this, I forget which defense contractor and whatever. And they came out and said, there's no record of him ever going to school here. There's no record of him working for this company. And then people found records. They found an old company directory that had his number in it. And they found some, you know, newspaper article where he went to school, where he went to school. So somebody went and wiped out this guy's records, his school records and his employment records. So there's a bunch of hinky crap going on because this guy came out and was sort of started to talk about Area 51 and what was going on there and that sort of thing. And you can, I find it to be a very compelling story. And one of the things he talks about was everything was really compartmentalized. So people only knew their little portion and he only saw these vehicles fly a couple of times. He was working on the power supply, but there were, you know, people who were able to control them. And he was able to get inside one of them at one point and whatever. And he got in trouble because he brought people out to Area 51 and they had camcorders at the time, you know, recording on VHS tape or whatever. You're just bringing civilians out there. He's like, hey, you got to check this out. Well, you know, obviously that's a big no-no for secret projects. So check out his story if you're interested in this. So it's very possible that there are physical objects that can fly through the sky and even underwater, because apparently they can go underwater in the sky, that can do things that are beyond our current understanding of aeronautics and physics, although we have, there are, you know, theories about how we could make certain things work using gravity waves, a gravity wave generator or something. I don't know. It's beyond my understanding. But again, the important thing to me is that this is a phenomenon that has been understood through the lens of various points of human development, human culture, human, you know, human technological understanding over the years. And, you know, Graham Hancock, again, in one of his books, talks about how the fairy phenomena, or phenomenon, but phenomena, there's multiple phenomena. There, he talks about how the way people describe alien abduction and alien encounters is parallel, almost exactly the same as the way they talked about fairy abduction, right? So you have people in the British Isles and other places where they believed in fairies, you had people who were abducted by fairies, people abducted by aliens these days. They were taken for a period of time and where they would have missing time. Same thing, both places. There were fairy-human hybrids, so they would mate with humans and create these crossbreeds. Again, fairies, aliens, we've heard the same stories. And sometimes they were returned after some period of time with these stories to tell and, you know, whatever, whatever. You can draw a ton of parallels between these things, which makes me think that people are describing the same phenomena, whether it's real or something that we are dreaming out of the collective unconscious, or it is spiritual phenomena. Now, let me take this let me extend this and take this into a little bit of a different realm and talk about the spiritual for a minute. Now, I come from a shamanic background, which is animist, and that we believe that everything has a spirit or everything is a spirit. So dogs, cats have spirit, as humans do, but so do rocks and trees and rivers. And the world is full of non-human spirits. In fact, human spirits are a tiny, tiny minority of entities and beings that you can encounter out there. There are also spirits of the dead. There are spirits that we would label gods and goddesses, or angels and demons, or what have you. Those labels are all extremely limited. Very limited. The word God, and I don't mean the source consciousness, like when we talk about God with a capital G, right? The source of all things, the one unifying consciousness. I'm talking about gods and goddesses from various belief systems and whatever. Any description of them is highly limited, and limited by, again, our capability, our paradigm, our reality tunnel, to use a term coined by Robert Anton Wilson. Very hard for us to step outside of our reality tunnel. Very hard for us to understand something that is so outside of our experience and knowledge and culture, and yet we want to make sense out of everything. That's a natural human instinct to make sense out of things, right? It's a survival instinct. If I see a wild animal that I've never encountered before, I, first of all, have to understand that it's an animal and that it's not a plant that's just sitting there, but it's something that moves around and it may have teeth and claws. And I have to understand if it poses a danger to me or I don't survive and pass my genes on and my kids don't pass their genes on, right? So human beings want to make sense out of things. But we can only make sense out of things with our extremely limited resources or extremely limited viewpoint. Now, to us, reality, 3D ordinary reality, can seem very real. We can see, like, this is the end of the line. This is what it is. Everything I'm experiencing is absolutely objective. And I'm here to tell you that that's not true. And anybody who's taken an entheogen or done shamanic journeying knows that's not true, that there are so many layers to reality that we don't perceive normally, but we can if we are able to shift our consciousness in different ways. Very, very limited. And it's something to understand that. If you can understand that, if you can understand that all of the reality you experience is not objective, all of it, or I should say, none of it is objective, to undo a double negative there. None of the reality you experience is objective. Everything you experience is subjective. It comes through the, you know, looking around the environment you're in. This comes through your limited perceptions. Now, you have, three types of color sensors in your eye, right? They can see, red, I think it's red, green, and blue. And every color you can observe is made up of some combination of those things, right? Now, dogs see fewer colors than humans do. Mantis shrimp have something like 16 different types of cells in their composite eyes. We can't even comprehend what it would be like to see things like a mantis shrimp. Our reality would be unbelievably different, not to mention like what their consciousness must be like, right? We think we are it when it comes to reality, not even close. Now, when we get into the realm of beings, pure, like beings that we perceive as purely spiritual, like gods and goddesses. So one thing I'll tell you about gods and goddesses, I'll do a whole episode on gods and goddesses coming up. Maybe I'll do it as my next episode. So, you know, assume for a moment that gods and goddesses are real individual beings. So let's take the god Odin, my fave from Norse mythology, although I'm very fond of Freya as well. So let's take Odin, for example. And, you know, to the ancient Norse and to modern, well, to the ancient Norse anyway, Odin was a dude who could show up at your house. But he was also as big as giants, and he had different appearances and could shapeshift into eagles and, you know, all kinds of different beings, right? And there were something like 75 attested to different titles for him. He could be a warrior. He could show up in armor. He could show up as an old man in a gray cap. He could, you know, all of these things. My understanding of how the entities known as gods work is we experience aspects of them, right? We experience avatars of these gods. That's a, you know, that word I believe comes out of Sanskrit because they actually talk about avatars, right? Of their gods and goddesses interacting in the world. So they interact, so they can show up in multiple places. Like, so if you have 1,000 people praying to the same God, that God can be present and hear the prayers for all of these different people. It's not just omnipresence, but they show up as different in different aspects, right? So in my shamanic work, we frequently deal with the compassionate aspect. Gods and goddesses are very complex beings frequently in different cultures. You have mother goddesses who are also goddesses of destruction. You have Freya in Norse mythology, who is a goddess associated with beauty and love and sexuality and sensuality, but also a war goddess. You know, and that might make more sense if you were looking at it through a lens of that culture, but that culture isn't around anymore. Yeah, people have tried to recreate that. You have modern heathens, and you have some families who have passed some things down in Scandinavia and perhaps Iceland and, you know, I don't know, other places maybe. But again, it's, you know, we don't have that lens anymore. An interesting thing is in Iceland, something like 25% of people believe in elves. If you read the stories, if you read the Norse stories about elves, very, very interesting stuff. You know, again, akin to the fairies and you know, get away from our ideas of elves and fairies from you know, more modern story. Like when you think of fairies, you might think of Tinkerbell, this little tiny being 2 inches high with gossamer wings flying around. You know, that is sort of like the Renaissance paintings of angels as these, you know, white dudes with long hair in gowns, you know, whatever, does not match original descriptions of angels from, particularly from the Old Testament. So, you know, go back and look at this stuff. So I do think that whatever is going on, whether it's, my take is that we're probably talking about lots and lots of different phenomena that are occurring in similar ways. Weird things in the sky, the small beings that jump in and out of existence. From an animist perspective, everything is spirit. So to say that aliens are spiritual beings or interdimensional beings is sort of like saying humans are animals. They are, but so are lots of other things, right? You know, so that doesn't really narrow it down. Are these beings, you know, a race of beings from other planets, you know, that are in our universe? Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. But given the challenges of interstellar travel and time and that sort of thing, you know, they have to be, one would think, not have to, there's nothing have to, you know, the ability to travel between stars is complex. And, you know, there's gotta be a lot, if it's a strictly mechanical technology thing, then, you know, it is well beyond what we understand today or even kind of theorize about, I guess. Is it interdimensional? Is it, I think there becomes a point. So if we go back to early alchemy, for example, and I just did an episode on alchemy, there was no division between the material world and the spiritual world. What alchemists were doing is they were trying to get to the spirit of matter, of different things, plants, minerals, metals. They were trying to get to the spirit, the pure spirit of that, and the source of that being the prima materia, the original material behind all things, right? And I honestly think that things that we think of as spiritual phenomena, like we have this sort of neat separation in our minds between spiritual and physical phenomena. But I think it's way messier than that. I think reality, there's a heck of a lot of overlap. There's some fantastic stuff. I have a book on my desk. Pardon me if there's a little bit of noise as I shuffle things around on my desk to try to grab this book. I've not read the entire book yet. This book is called Soul Matter. And it is written by Jean-Rachel Salomon, S-A-L-O-M-O-N, Ph.D. Now, I know a couple things because her work was, she was a cohort of my shamanic teacher. She studied under the same teacher my teacher did, and my teacher recommended her work. Now, this book, if you can get it, I don't know if it's still in print. I got an original copy of this that went out, and then the author figured out that there were some mistakes that the editors had made and then recalled all of the books. So if there's a new version out, you know, you may be able to find that. But I've got the first version that came out before they corrected editorial mistakes. This is called Soul Matters, Modern Science Confirming Ancient Wisdom. And this woman, who's brilliant, did her PhD research on shamanic healing and used technology like quantum EEG machines to measure brainwave patterns and can demonstrate. We can technologically demonstrate non-local effect. This isn't the only work here. And this this book is basically her thesis, but done as a book form. But yeah, so she's got case studies in here. She's got, technological research, the quantum, the overlapping between quantum field. A lot of what goes on today technologically is anytime people can't understand, anytime science can't understand something, they go, oh, that's quantum. It's a quantum effect. Well, it may be. I mean, everything physical is quantum. It's sort of like saying, you know, again, people are animals. Sure. But lots of things are animal, you know, all animals are animals. Or like saying everything, you know, people have a spirit from an animist perspective. Well, yes, but so do the rocks and the trees and the rivers. Everything has quantum things going on with it. The electrons in every atom in your body, quantum jump between electron shells. The electrons in your body right now, every single one of them teleports. When an electron moves from one shell to another, it does not cross the space in between. It blinks out of existence and then blinks into existence in the new shell. So you, every part of you, every physical part of you is teleporting as we speak, just by sitting still, doing nothing. You've experienced teleportation countless times over your life. Trillions of trillions of trillions of times. And that's just normal. It's how it is. So everything has a quantum effect. Light, matter, everything. Everything is made up of, you know, material that we now understand as quantum. Until some new model of science comes along, right? So we had, you know, sort of originally, before we used the word science, we had Newtonian physics. And remember that Isaac Newton, beyond, they called his field of study natural philosophy, right? There wasn't something known as physics. There wasn't something known as science. It was called natural philosophy. Philosophers and scientists were the same thing. And he was an alchemist. He studied alchemy. He practiced. He had a lab in his home. And he wanted to understand how the world worked. So he came up with the laws of physics that still govern motion and how planets move. And he, you know, discovered the law of gravity. And he invented calculus to describe the motion of planets and things like that, right? Still effective today. Still works at a larger scale. Then at a smaller scale, you know, Einstein came along and came out with the theory of relativity. And that started to get a little weirder. And we're still proving out parts of relativity. And there were parts of it missing. But that allowed us to do things like split the atom, for better or for worse. And to understand how things worked at a much smaller level. So that was a new paradigm. And that works. It works for what we need to use it for. But beyond that level, what's underneath that? So then we've got, now we've got quantum physics. And when it's interesting when you see quantum physicists speak, they get to a certain level and then they start talking in what I can only describe as very spiritual terms, right? Erwin Schrödinger of Schrödinger's cat fame said the number of consciousnesses in the universe is one, right? This is a guy who, you know, foundational in some of the principles of modern physics and was talking about consciousness and how there was only a single consciousness in the universe. Isn't that interesting? And you look at guys like Oppenheimer, and you look at Einstein, and these guys were not, they didn't say, you know, my physics disproves spiritual reality, or the existence of higher intelligence or consciousness or whatever. Not at all. Their stuff started to get really, Einstein called some of it spooky action at a distance, right? Quantum entanglement. I can have two particles separated by any distance, two particles created in the same reaction, and if I observe one, it affects the other with no information passing between them. We don't know how that happens yet. We don't. But it makes things like we've done quantum teleportation. We've done, I mean, years ago, we did faster than light communication using what's called electron tunneling, right? It transmitted, I think it was like one of Beethoven's symphonies through a really long lead brick, and it traveled at 1.6 times the speed of light. Isn't that physically impossible? Well, according to relativity, right? But we're learning new stuff all the time. Relativity still works. There's still important stuff going on there. But we're going into a new scientific paradigm now. And the hard problem in science, you know, the hardest problem that I know of currently is consciousness. Where does consciousness come from? And, you know, some materialists would say, well, consciousness is just a byproduct of the brain. That does not explain your subjective experience. A bunch of ones and zeros passing through a silicon chip is not self-aware, does not have a subjective experience of something. As complex as we can make that computer, does not have subjective experience. and does not have an experience separate from brain activity, which has been observed, right? People who have died who've had experiences that they remember, similar experiences that they remember. And so my explanation of this, again, is very similar to Graham Hancock's explanation that the brain is a transceiver of consciousness, but that consciousness itself seems to be non-local. Does that mean it is a quantum thing? Perhaps if we, I mean, we really, you know, but science, physics really wants a physics explanation of consciousness. It's uncomfortable for them to think that there may be an other than straight up physical. And maybe we will get to the point with our science sometime in the next billion years where we can use physics to explain spiritual phenomena like consciousness, like life after death, that sort of thing. That doesn't take anything away from spiritual effect. It doesn't make it any less special or cool or wonderful. We know we have consciousness. That is a beautiful, to me, that is the miracle of miracles. The fact that some wavy air coming out of your, you know, your AirPods or headphones or phone or car speakers or whatever hit your eardrums and an electrical signal goes back into your brain and you experience me talking to you. That's consciousness. My speech, your understanding of my words, that is arising in your consciousness. That's not a result of electrical signaling. The wire that goes from my microphone into my mixing box and eventually into my computer isn't having an experience of me speaking. It's transferring digital information. It's just ones and zeros, right? And that's it's translated into, you know, over many different times into different things. Like this is being recorded as a bunch of ones and zeros that will be put into MP3 format, which is compressed, also ones and zeros, but in different format. And then you'll upload it and download it. And when you download it and play it, that has to be translated into sound waves or into electrical signals that are then translated into sound waves. Very analog. So go analog, digital, digital, analog. None of those things is having an experience like you're having of me talking to you. Right? So, anyway, I'm going to wrap this for today. Been talking about UFOs, aliens, fairies, gods and goddesses, consciousness, technology, and what we understand about it and some different ways to look at it. And if I can pass along one thing, one key, just understand that you are living in a reality tunnel. We all are. We all have tunnel vision. We cannot really understand anything outside of that reality tunnel without shifting the reality tunnel, expanding it or tearing it down to some extent, but that just makes it larger. We live in a different reality tunnel. Understand that our subjective reality is subjective. And the meanings we place on things are subjective. It's not reality. And we get into trouble when we try to impose our reality on other people. So put some thought into that, and I will, I'll be doing more of these going forward. I also have a YouTube channel where I do live broadcasts on. It's called Shaman's Tent. You can find it on my website, which is at mainshaman.com, or just go to YouTube and search for me, John Moore at Shaman's Tent. And I have a you know, fairly regular live video broadcast I do where people can ask me questions and we talk about topics. And it's called the Shamanic Coffee Hour. The topics are not always about shamanism either. It's somewhat like this. Pick some random topics. But I hope to see you there, and we'll talk to you real soon.
You have been listening to Speaking Spirit with your host, John Moore. For more info or to contact John, go to mainshaman.com. That's M-A-I-N-E-S-H-A-M-A-N.com.